Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes, and you're listening to Heat Rocks. Normally, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, fire, flammables, an album that bumps eternally. But this week, we're doing something just a little different.
2020 marks the 25th anniversary of not one, not two, but three hip-hop classics, all by members of the Wu-Tang Clan. Liquid Swords by the GZA, Return to the 36 Chambers by Old Dirty Bastard, and Only Built for Cuban Links by Raekwon featuring Ghostface Killah. In honor of GZA's birthday, which is this very week, we decided to recut and remaster our three episodes about those Shaolin Sizzlers.
These are just small snippets of great conversation, so please do check out the full episodes if you're interested in learning more about these albums.
First up, it's rapper Open Mike Eagle talking about Old Dirty Bastard's Return to the 36 Chambers.
The genius.
The genius.
The genius. I'll grab the mic and I'll damage you. Crush your whole stamina. Here comes the medical examiner. One burst in your op with a count. Bring the ammonia. Make sure he stood the right amount. Wake him up and then ask him. Why did he attend this? Competition to get an ass kicking so tremendous. Boy, you know you shouldn't bother.
So because this is the first time we have gotten into any Wu-Tang album on the show, I thought we would open by talking about how we first heard Wu-Tang. But Mike, when we were talking before we started taping, you mentioned that ODB was your introduction to the Wu, which is surprising because I think I would have assumed most people would have come to the Wu through that first album. But yeah, tell us about that.
I would hear the name Wu-Tang Clan, and at the time, so this was like 92, 93, and I'm first starting to hear their name. In my head, it was like Fushnikins. It was like some wacky, crazy, you know, leaders of the new school kind of thing is what I had in my head. Because I wasn't listening to a lot of rap at the time. I was listening to a lot of like alternative and like college rock at the time when I was like 12. But that was my hang. So I would hear these names. And if there were songs on the radio, I would hear those. But I didn't hear any Wu-Tang on the radio, not in Chicago where I grew up. And one day I was watching television, and we had The Box in Chicago. And for those that aren't, it was a music video channel that you would pick up the phone and dial their number and put in the code for the video you'd want to see. And the video for Shimmy Shimmy Ya was the first thing I saw.
Ooh, baby, I like it raw. Yeah, baby, I like it raw. Ooh, baby, I like it raw. Yeah, baby, I like it.
Like the image that I remember most in this moment is the part where they were doing the Soul Train line, and he was like doing kung fu moves down the Soul Train line, and then he like broke the board with his finger. And I was like, this is content that speaks to me, you know?
But you didn't even touch my skill. You gotta go to one killer bee, and he ain't gonna kill now. Drop that down, pass it all around. Lyrics get hard, quick cement to the ground. For an EMC and any...
This was such a profoundly strange album, which we were talking about before we started taping, but it is a weird album.
Weird.
And I mean that in mostly the best ways possible. Yeah.
I mean, it's weird from the start. Like...
Yeah, that intro. Oh,
that intro.
Remember the time I told y'all when I got burnt, gonorrhea? Yeah. Well, this bitch, a new bitch, god damn it. Oh, bitch burnt me again with gonorrhea. So I didn't get burnt one time. I got burnt actually two times, if you really look at it. Yeah.
I mean, to devote the better part of it to sort of a weird discussion about getting an STD.
Oh, there's so many STDs on this album.
It is like the whole thing is a health code violation. Mm-hmm.
They should have wrapped it in like a prophylactic.
Or something, right? And then like, I mean, it's not just because I love Roberta Flack, but just to desecrate that song in the most perverse ways. I almost didn't make it through the album. I almost just stopped at the intro and was like, this is crazy. And the dude in the Soul Train line with the afro and stuff, I'm just not here. Mm-hmm. That said, Shimmy Ya's a banger. And so I sort of got past that. But it was just a hint of what was to come, that there were a lot of uncomfortable things to listen to as a woman, that both course. Then and now. But you got to have a strong stomach for that intro.
Absolutely.
Strong stomach, indeed. So my question is, when you came to this album, how did you get this album and where did you get this album? Did you buy it yourself?
This might have been one of the first CDs I bought with my own money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it was a record store down the street from my place. And like I said, I was just really getting into rap. So walking into this record store, this little tiny, mostly rap record store.
What was the name of it?
Oh, God, that I don't remember. Okay. I know it was on 83rd and Stony Island, but I don't remember the name of it. Mm. But I bought maybe my first 7 to 10, you know, rap releases that I owned. I bought at this place. And every time I walked in, it was just like eyes wide, trying to take in everything. But I went straight for that. I just had to know what the rest of that thing sounded like.
Right motherfucking hand. I'm the god who's the head of the lord. Dirty bastard from the Wu-Tang squad. Can I get raw? Yes, I get dirty to the floor.
Were each of you listening to a lot of the Wu-Tang solo albums heavy in addition to the first group album? Because, I mean, the year this comes out was nuts. I mean, it's 95. He drops his album. You have Jizz's Liquid Swords comes out the same year. And then Raekwon and Ghost put out Only Built for Cuban Links all in the same calendar year. So if you had gotten a taste of Wu on the first, you know, Enter the 36 Chambers album, like 95 was just like a buffet and then some in terms of the amount of content you could sift through. And of course, Riz is touching all of it. So sonically, there's a great consistency running across these albums, too.
I liked Raekwon. I liked him as a storyteller. And I think I got into those albums a little bit, Liquid Swords and that a little bit more, because the Wu-Tang Clan to me was adept at telling stories. Mm-hmm. That they created this mythical place that I hadn't heard of. I'm tried and true West Coaster. I'm raised in L.A. So Shaolin Island was something mythical and fantastical, and they really drew me in. I didn't like Old Dirty Bastard for that same reason, that to me he wasn't telling stories. It was like somebody got high in the studio, let my man go, and it was just a bunch of, there was genius in there somewhere, mm-hmm. but it was a mix of stream of consciousness, and I'm in here messed up, and I'm singing it, woo, you know, not animated in the same way as Busta Rhymes, where it was a device. Mm-hmm. It was just, he was disjointed. Mm-hmm. And so I was drawn to the other stars, because I thought they were so nice. They were so nice with the bars. And I never thought that about Old Dirty. I thought he was funny and crazy. And that was the appeal, I guess, a little bit.
It's interesting, too. I read some interview where Meth was saying that a lot of the bars on Old Dirty's album, like the ones that were coherent, were ones that Jizzle wrote.
Wow.
Because a lot of that stuff was stuff from their old group. Was it All In Together Now?
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff was stuff that he just memorized, that Jizza wrote. That's why on that song Damage, that's why he ends up saying that same verse like 3 times through the album, because he would just come in and kick that one because that's what he had memorized.
That's interesting, because of the 9, Jizza's my favorite. Mm. Uh-huh, Jizza's my favorite.
Well, that makes me wonder if a song like Brooklyn Zoo, then, did ODB write that, or is that someone else? Because that to me has one of the more coherent, I mean, it's the song itself is just really one long verse, but it's a very coherent verse. And to what extent, like, who authored that?
Yeah.
I'm the one man army ace on. I never been tooken out. I keep MCs looking out. I drop signs like Crosby dropping babies. Enough to make a nigga go crazy. In the G building, taking all types of medicines. Your ass thought you were better than a son.
To me, that feels very much like him. Mm-hmm. And because the rhythm of it is already disjointed. Mm. So I feel like that fits where he would go with, like, his pen. Yeah. His stream of consciousness, to me, fits that more than it would, like, a song like Damaged, which is very intricately written and back and forth between him and Jizza. To me, it makes more sense that Jizza wrote that, where I think Brooklyn Zoo is coherent thematically, but how it's constructed is very all over the place.
Yeah.
But to come back to this question, and you mentioned earlier that ODB was your intro into the Wu, the greater Wu. Did it turn you into, in general, a Wu-Tang fan? Were you listening to all the solo albums as a consequence?
When I got into the first album, gravitated towards Dirty, gravitated towards Meth, RZA, Jizza. you got Master Killer, Ray, and Ghost didn't really grab me at the time because I think that what I was listening for was more of a character than actual, like, intricate writing or storytelling at the time. But I have a deep affinity for all of them. There are some songs where, like, You God's verse is, like, my absolute favorite. Capadonna, you know, Master Killer, all of them. I really love their music, and I love the differences and nuances of their approaches, and it kind of all started with my journey with them all started that year.
Let's talk about RZA a little bit, because his production on this album and all of the Wu efforts coming out of that first one through the first waves of all the solo efforts, I mean, he is the glue that really holds together all of these efforts sonically. For each of you, what was it about RZA's sound that was distinctive that you think helped the Wu become who they became?
When I first started hearing RZA's beats, especially after Enter the 36 Chamber, so basically his beats on these first rounds of solo albums, they were the first beats that I heard that had me thinking about production. Because to me, they sounded so different than other people's. Like, the way he was sampling, like, I felt like I could see the grids in my mind and, like, where he was putting stuff. And he tended to use this drum pattern. It's like, do-doom, 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 do-doom. Like, a lot of his tracks had that.
Same with you when you stepped up too.
And for some reason, just even that rhythm was just, I just gravitated to that rhythm, and it sounded so different than, you know, a lot of the boom bap stuff that was, you know, the early 90s. It was a grit to it.
Right.
And I thought it was really awesome, especially listening back to this album, how he was able to tailor each solo album's production to that rhymer's style. So, like, Method Man sounded really dark. It would swing poppy, but it sounded, like, really dark. ODB's, it was chaotic. The production on his album is all over the place, but it fits his style perfectly. Loops started in the middle of a beat, you know, and it all seems to fit him. And, you know, and, like, the drama and a lot of, like, the Raekwon, in the Raekwon stuff. I think that, I don't know if we've ever seen anything like that, you know, where that sort of care was taken. And I think this is all pre-flood, right? Wasn't there a flood? I think RZA had some sort of home disaster.
Oh, right. Yeah,
that
yeah.
Wiped out, because he had beats made for every solo album, but then there was some disaster and all that stuff got lost. And I think that, like, that's kind of a turning point in RZA's style too.
When I think of his style, I think of the Piano Man. Shout out to Billy Joel. You can't get away from the piano. The piano with the mix of kung fu. And in this album, the piano's so chunky. And it's chunky.
Yeah,
it seems like a little kid. And that's Old Dirty, like, sort of a kid.
Yeah.
Watching television, kung fu, all these influences, the hi-ya, and then the conversations. And that, to me, is the mind state of Old Dirty Bastard. And that's what it feels like to me.
That's true, too. And it's so interesting that you say that, because I can remember messing around with pianos, trying to reproduce these, and they were all very easy to do.
Yeah,
they're all, like, super simple piano lines. And
Fisher Price.
Yeah,
Fisher Price. Yeah,
like the chords in Brooklyn Zoo are super easy. The shimmy shimmy ya, it's just like two notes. Like, yeah, there's a lot of that. And I think me being relatively young coming to it, all those things kind of worked in concert. Like, his image, the simplicity of a lot of that stuff is kind of what appealed to me, you know, as a young person, I think.
I think the observation about the piano is great. I mean, partly because there is so much keys that were on this album and part of that early Wu sound. And I think it also makes me think of the dissonance in how he uses some of those chords. And I think on one of the songs, which is at the very end of the conventional album, and not including the bonus tracks that were on the CD, but Cuttin' Heads, which is Old Dirty Bastard and RZA, from a 1992 demo, which is why it sounds like shit, but it actually really works that it sounds like shit. But I think that's actually a Thelonious Monk loop. And it really makes sense that, given Monk's experimentations with dissonance, that this would be also appealing to RZA.
Isn't that powerful? Here it is.
Where's it at?
In the back.
Gotta stop.
The dirty back.
Let's talk about the fire track on here. Okay. So, and I'll be curious to see what each of you picked for this, but let's start with you, Mike. What is the fire track off of Return?
The fire, so is this like my favorite or the best or?
It's you. I mean, you can interpret it any way you want, but I think typically it would be like, what's the best song on here?
Ooh, oh man. The best song on here is Brooklyn Zoo. That's the best song.
Good. Because I think, I mean, yeah. Shimmy Shimmy Ya, not to take anything away from it, a classic, certainly the most popular song, but like Brooklyn Zoo to me is it.
Yeah, what?
Tell
what?
Him that nigga, yo. He ain't saying nothing, fuck him.
I'm the one man army ace on. I never been tooken out. I keep MCs looking out. I drop signs like Crosby dropping babies. Enough to make a nigga go crazy. In the Jeep.
Yeah, it's just one of those songs that just perfectly captures the energy of something and like one of those lightning in a bottle type songs. And I think for what he was doing, this is like a perfect capturing of that, you know, rhythmically, energetically. I mean, you got your pianos.
You got your pianos.
And it's a song that, I mean, people that I was listening to music with around that time, like our whole generation, like even people who were listening to like mainstream rap, like really heavy at the time, everybody knows every word to the song.
Break and shake your ass as oxygen. Rhyme good as a tasty cake makes. This style I'm mastered in. Niggas catching headaches. What? You need aspirin. This type of pain you couldn't even kill.
This is the, to me, Brooklyn Zoo is ODB's coming out party. Mm. This is me. This is my style. I can flex. Love it.
How? I don't even like your motherfucking profile. Give me my fucking shit. Wow, that scene and heard. No one knows. You forget. Niggas be quiet as cat. Now you know.
In Going Down, which is another one of my favorite songs on here, he says his advantage is the slang. Mm. And I don't know that that was his advantage. I don't know that that was his advantage.
He's convincing people to get glossary,
maybe
glossary books to decipher it.
I'm not saying it was a disadvantage, but I'm saying he had other advantages. His appeal was larger than that. Can we hear a little bit of that?
Yo, but I like to thank all the DJs across the country for playing my shit. And I also like to thank all you underground motherfuckers for keeping it real. But I want to know who's in the motherfucking high.
I mean, you gotta love that. You gotta love that. He's thanking people for listening to his shit in the middle of the song, like in the middle of the album. Like, you don't know. I don't know. I that's all of that stuff. Like, and how he used to introduce. He was just like this, the showman at the weirdest times. But that's the type of stuff.
He's a carnival barker.
He is.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I was just going to say that while he may have thought his advantage was his slang, I thought his advantage was his swagger, his self-confidence, and his humor. Mm-hmm. That's what made Old Dirty Bastard. And the fact that compared to the rest of the band, your name is Old Dirty Bastard.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You know, you got all these deep names. And then it's just you with the ill hair, the fronts. And your name is Old Dirty Bastard. Love it. And he would say, oh, I'm stinking. I'm, you know.
Yeah, Dirty Ain't Bastard no, is dirty and stinking.
Right? Ain't no father to a style.
Ain't no father to a style, for sure.
Sweet sugar pie. Oh, I wish you were mine. Looking so good. Like you know you should.
We ask our guests to describe the album that they chose in three words. So if you had to describe this album in three words, what would they be?
Irreverent, zany, escapist.
Ooh.
Oh shit, here I go once again. Rhyme gets shitty from the time that I spend. I come old like toe fungus mold. Ask my grandpa, Pop Duke, give me show. Then I came with that old Al Green shit. Say he there, taught me the ballistic.
By the way, Open Mic Eagle just announced a new album today, so be on the lookout for that in October. Up next, it's our conversation with music journalist David Ma on GZA's Liquid Swords.
Yo, I got your back with your best to watch your front. Cause it's the niggas in front that you want shunts. I got your back, but your best to watch your front. Cause it's the niggas in front that you want stunts. I was always taught by dudes and don'ts, but dudes are dead.
Dave, you gave us a few options of album picks, but you emphasized you really, really wanted to talk about Liquid Swords. Why is that?
Well, you know, I mean, it's one of those albums that sort of spine tingling right from the top, you know, in the same way that David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust starts off with 5 years, or how Velvet Underground's Andy Warhol starts off with Sunday Morning, or how Low End Theory kicks off with Excursions. It's one of those first tracks where you know you're in for something special, but there's a feeling of uneasiness. So, you know, when the album kicks off and he's like, when I was little, my father was famous, and that dialogue sample kicks in, you right away are just intrigued, and it just struck me immediately.
When I was little, my father was famous. He was the greatest samurai in the empire. And he was the shogun's decapitator. He cut off the heads of 131 lords. It was a bad time for the empire.
Some of what we ask our guests when they come in, because we are interested in how you came to acquire the album that you chose. Mm-hmm. So can you remember the moment that you got Liquid Swords, where you got it, how you got it?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I was in high school, and this was back in the time, I don't know if you guys remember, The Warehouse.
Yeah.
So you could go to The Warehouse. You could go there and buy anything you want, and then if you don't like it, turn it right back for store credit. It was one of those where I used my revolving store credit, you know, umpteenth times, and came back with Liquid Swords and certainly kept it right away. And, you know, it was a time when the mystique hadn't been completely punctured yet. So it was like, who are these Wu-Tang guys? Everything is fire. Everything's mind-blowing. And then here comes GZA, you know, the aforementioned guy who anchors all the posse cuts. It's like he has his own solo album. And this is on the heels of, like, you know, Tikal had just been out already. So I was just super excited. And, I mean, it completely delivered.
I would have thought that after Enter the 36 Chambers blew up, GZA being kind of, you know, the head, the Voltron head, yeah, right, as Method Man once described him as,
right.
It would have made more sense to me that GZA would have had his solo album should have come first, and then whoever else, you know, Meth, Ray, ODB. And while, you know, fourth in line, and, you know, Ghostface was still after that, it's I don't know if the order really matters that much, but it always surprised me that GZA's album, his solo album, didn't come sooner compared to some of the other folks.
I got really lucky and got a chance to interview him. And it was one of those times where he had availability for a little press window, I think, to work on to talk about the album that he did with DJ Muggs. And it was one of those times where it was like, hi, GZA, you know, thank you for your time. We love the new album, but let's talk about Liquid Swords, you know. And it was one of those where you're kind of afraid that the artist doesn't want to break everything down, but he was very gracious with his time.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole sequencing thing, it sounded as if the blueprint was already there. I mean, just as we probably read in all the Wu-Tang books and stuff, I mean, RZA was the mastermind. He knew who he wanted on first and who he wanted on second and who to play shortstop, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And GZA was so foundational. I mean, on the album, he raps like he's on a grid. Everything's just sort of perfectly measured.
Mm.
And on Words from the Genius, I mean, there are moments where he's a little bit, he's rippity-rapping a little bit, you know, but on this, I mean, all that's just jettisoned. And everything he says, I mean, it's just so vivid, you know, and the tone of the production, I mean, certainly matched the lyrical imagery, like, to a T.
And do you have an idea of, so you think RZA is the one who chose which artists got to go, whose albums came in what order?
Yes, 100%. I think that was he was the mastermind behind that. And I think just from reading, you know, some journalism stuff, he wanted Meth to go first because, you know, it seemed like he had the most mainstream appeal.
Yeah. Right?
And Method Man had been a big single.
Yeah.
Right? And Dave, to come back to your earlier point that you mentioned around the transition, or the transformation of Genius to GZA, which I think is still really remarkable, because even though there's really only at most, 2-3 years between Words from a Genius to Enter the 36 Chambers, but in both vocal sound and style, and of course, as you pointed out, in musical sound and style,
those 3 years, it's like night and day. In fact, if we can just spin back to one of the singles from that Words from a Genius album from 91, this is Genius with some New Jack Swing, Come Do Me.
Said lovely, I be the genius, and how you doing? I'm on the chase and you're the one that I'm pursuing. She said, it's a pleasure, genius. I'm doing kind of fine, but what's on your mind? I said.
And then you just fast forward a few years, and then you get GZA on Swordsman, and just compare and contrast.
Yo, dick. Yeah. I'm not caught up in politics. I'm no black activist on a so-called scholar's dick. I come through with the wooden drop map. And versatile freestyle bombs.
I mean, that's wild. That is a wild right. shift.
Yeah.
The depth on how living things relate. Because at a young age, I was molded in a religion I relied on and got caught up in superstition. Scared to split poles, duck black cats once in a while.
We will be right back with more of our Wu-Tang medley episode after a few words from our sibling Max Fun podcast. Keep it locked.
One, two, one, two, three. Hi, everybody. My name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
We're both doctors. And
nope, just me.
Okay, well, Sydney's a doctor, and I'm a medical enthusiast, and we create Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine.
Every week, I dig through the annals of medical history to bring you the wildest, grossest, sometimes dumbest tales of ways we've tried to treat people throughout history.
Now, lately, we do a lot of modern fake medicine. Because everything's a disaster, but it's slightly less of a disaster every Friday, right here on MaximumFun.org, as we bring you Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. And remember,
don't drill a hole in your head.
Hi, I'm James, host of Minority Corner, which is a
podcast that's all about intersectionality. It's hosted by James with a guest host every week.
Discussing all sorts of wonderful issues, nerdy and political.
Pop culture.
Black, queer, feminism.
Race, sexuality.
News.
You're going to learn your history, their self-empowerment, and it's told by what feels like your best friend.
Why should someone listen to Minority Corner?
Why not?
Oh my God, free stuff.
There's not free stuff.
The listeners of Minority Corner will enjoy some necessary LOLs, but mainly a look at what's happening in our world through a colorful lens.
People will get the perspective of marginalized communities.
I feel heard. I feel seen.
Like you said, you need to understand how to be more proactive in your community, and this is a great way to get started.
Join us every Friday on Max Fun or wherever you get your podcast.
Minority Corner.
Because together we're the majority.
And we're back with our Wu-Tang medley episode. Right now we're talking with David Ma about GZA's solo LP, Liquid Swords.
Where does Liquid Swords rank amongst the Wu-Tang solo albums? Is this your favorite of the solo joints, Dave?
For me, it certainly is. And it's one that, you know, like I said, due to the sort of depth of the storytelling and just the way the lyrics marry with the atmosphere of the beats, it's certainly my favorite. I know that there's always sort of this debate between Liquid Swords or Cuban Links. And, you know, I find myself thinking Cuban Links has amazing moments, but Liquid Swords just as a whole, I think it's hard to top.
One of the things I really liked reading in your interview with GZA about Liquid Swords was him saying that he actually, that GZA likes just doing Meth's verse from Shadow Boxing because he had so much respect for that.
I break it down to the bone gristle. Hills peaking, Scud missile, heat seeking, Johnny blazing, nightmares like Wes Craven, niggas gunning, my third eye seen it coming, before it happened, you know about them fucking statin kids, they smashing, everything, in any shape, form, or fashion, now everybody talking about they blasting,
Is you bust- oh, wee, woo, wow.
In fuego,
and I mean, you know, he just came with that, you know, my steez, I mean, this is my favorite song on the album. It's just a banger, and even though I think Meth's verse was fire, I think that GZA did well for the middle. He didn't anchor this one,
I
but
think
he
so as well.
He came right in the middle and has one of my favorite lines on here that says,
"Most rap niggas came loud but unheard. Once I pulled out, round them off to the nearest third. Check these non-visual niggas with tapes in the port."
For somebody that's not good in math, this was a revelation. I was like, "This is incredible, short but sweet."
See?
And I think that everybody talks about Meth's verse, which is hands down fire. But I like what GZA had to say on here. Short, sweet, and in the middle and to the point.
See, it's all these 5%er guys. Of course, they understand today's mathematics. So they got their fractions down. They got their fractions down. Let's bring this back to the GZA, though.
Okay.
Because if there's something that's going to give this album some deductions, and this is, I'm just saying, this is me speaking. I'm not speaking for Morgan. I'm not speaking for Dave. Just for me. The skits are too long. The fact that it begins with, and I timed this because it was so freaking long. The album begins with 80 seconds from, was it Shogun Assassin? And why does it need to be that long? And here's the general rule to artists. This is the rule. If you're going to do a skit like that, it's got to be at the back end of the song so you can skip over it and then get to the beginning of the new song. But I don't want to have to like put on the song I like and then sit through 30 seconds of VHS taped Kung Fu dialogue.
I definitely feel you. I mean, I think a good skit works when it doesn't feel long. You know what I mean? But, you know, for this one, especially when it first came out, and to like go back and find out that these were from the Shogun Assassin series, were just amazing. And I do agree that it is long at the start. But I think it just centered the whole thing like perfectly. It just set the mood for the whole album, and it could be about 20 seconds shorter. But I do love that dialogue sample though. Mm.
They were supposed to kill my father, but they didn't. That was the night everything changed.
Sometimes.
Speaking of samples, just want to name check a few that were featured on this album, if I could. Of course, with Liquid Swords, we've got Groovin', Willie Mitchell.
Typhoons. I represent from midnight to high noon. I don't waste ink, nigga. I think I drop megaton bombs more fast than your blink.
On Gold, we have Aries, Cannonball Adderley, and the Adderley Sextets.
This is Aries Aram, ruled by the planet Mars, god of war.
Anybody be playing over here? I'm a tunnel. That's mine. Y'all niggas step the fuck off. Y'all niggas ain't crazy for real. Yo, the things ain't coming fast enough.
Shadow boxing. We've got that beautiful, beautiful, very short. But one of the things that made that so funky with for me was the Ann Peebles Troubles, Heartaches and Sadness.
Whoa. Oh man, trouble.
Speaking of favorites, what track for you is the fire track on here?
Ooh, I think Gold is my favorite track.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, you know, when they're mentioning, you know, being buried with all that money in her womb, in her tomb, like when he's talking about his mother. And again, I just think that's one of the greatest examples of storytelling. It's just so vivid. He goes really quickly. Between images and sort of scenes from the movie, if you will, and I really think the way his voice is captured on that as well is just so perfect.
The plan was to expand, catch seven figures, release triggers, and live large and bigger than my nigga who promised his mom's a mansion with mad room. She died and still put $100,000 in the tomb. Open wounds, he hid behind closed doors and still organizes crime and drug wars. Things.
I think it's as good, as vivid as anything like Slick Rick has ever done. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Except for it's about 10 years removed and grimier. And, you know, he's deep down in the back streets. You know, like it's just so dark. I love it.
Is Jizza the best, the nicest with the verses out of the Wu-Tang, out of the Clan?
Oh, you're gonna come with that as a closing question?
My bad. Well, you can put it somewhere else.
No.
In the interview, but if you had to rank them.
Yeah, you know, I think if you're thinking in terms of pure rhyming, and you know, he doesn't depend or sort of fall back on any gimmicks, like, you know, like ODB's the wild one, Jizza's
right.
Not the wild one. Method is the sex symbol with the sexy voice. Jizza's not either. You know, Jizza's sort of the quiet scholar genius. So it works out perfectly, I think.
The thing is, Morgan, I think if you had asked me this question, let's say 10 years ago, I probably would have said, without hesitation, I would have said Ghostface. Mm. And I think partly it's because Ghostface, especially in the 90s, especially off of Supreme Clientele, which I mentioned earlier, I just thought he was so creative. like between the voice, the flow, the lyrics, of course, Ghost really, really stood out to me coming off of that particular album. I think with the benefit of time, though, I think GZA, to me, is, if not the clear number one, is at least the arguable number one.
Mm-hmm.
For all the reasons that you already stated. And yeah. I think, you know, there's a reason why he was the head of the Voltron robot, is because he was the most experienced, he was the most senior alongside RZA, and that he just had gravitas, you know, and I think that counts for a lot, especially when you think back over the passage of time.
The soft comedian rap, she ain't the rough witty. On the real of real, it wasn't from a tough city. Niggas be game, thinking that they lyrical surgeons. They know they mics are from the virgin. And if you ain't boom the mic, you couldn't hurt a beat. That's like going to Venus, driving the Mercury. The capital
of this... So Dave, as a writer, this is usually what ties up our other guests who are writers. But if you had to describe Liquid Swords in three words, what would your triplet be?
All right. So I think I would go with cinematic for, you know, obvious reasons, because, I mean, every time we talk about the album, it's like you're watching freeze frames from a film, you know. So that would be one for me. The second would be observational, because I think with him, obviously the album is filled with like so much braggadocio stuff. But at the end of the day, it's sort of like GZA sitting there in the same way like Illmatic is, where he's just painting a picture of his surroundings and what he's sort of seeing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the third word, I'm just going to go with an easy one, but I think it's kind of genius.
I love it. Love it.
Holy Ghost, RZA, let's defraud the hoax. When the motherfucker steps out his place and gets slapped in his goddamn face, just because the nigga what he tried to base. But G.O. Dick, but G.O. Dick.
And to round out our Wu-Tang episode, here is our conversation from earlier this year with Havoc of Mobb Deep about Raekwon's Only Built for Cuban Links.
Back in the days, crime pays in mad ways. Sporting Tommy Hill with caves, 360 waves, and no searching for loose ends. Now flex 300 bins, mad tens with mad diamonds. Now that's the life of the good life. Sometimes niggas act tripe. I pay the price.
Havoc, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start here. How did you and Raekwon first cross paths?
Me and Raekwon first crossed paths back in, I would say, it would have had to be 94. We was label mates, of course. And Steve Rifkin used to have us, Mobb Deep and Wu-Tang, doing a lot of functions together. And, you know, I can't remember exactly, specifically the moment I met Raekwon, but I know during that era, like, we kind of gravitated more towards Ghost and Raekwon, you know what I mean, for whatever reason it was. And, you know, we was cool ever since.
I always thought that your career with Mobb Deep really paralleled that of the Wu. And in particular, I always think about the ways in which you and Prodigy, along with RZA and GZA, all of you had these first albums that maybe didn't quite capture your full potential. And it took the second albums, in which, you know, for RZA and GZA, it would have been the end of the 36 Chambers. Obviously, for you and P, it would have been the Infamous. And that those are the albums that really cohered for people what you all were about. And so I'm wondering, to the extent that there was this transition point that both you and Prodigy were going through, but the Wu was going through it as well, all around the same time, to what degree were each of you and your camps really listening to one another's music?
You know, I couldn't really tell during that time if they was listening to our music, but I know that we was listening to theirs. You know what I mean? They already had put out the 36 Chambers, huge success. It was crazy. They was playing it everywhere. And, you know, I kind of was listening to it after a while as sort of a template. You know what I mean?
What is it that you were learning from it?
It didn't sound processed like these, like, manufactured hits. Some of the beats was, like, really, really muddy and grimy, but at the same time, powerful.
Word up, pushed up, man got mushed up. Seen him at a rap show, acting like backhat, though. Glasses gold, shining like a real big boy. This nigga had mega ice on Chips Ahoy. Cats around it, this political brown kid. All out the window, my man walked in, pulling mitts out, son had.
What were your expectations going into Cuban Links? And had you heard any of the early versions of the songs when they were still working on it in the lab?
I didn't hear none of the early songs off of Raekwon's album I wasn't even privy to that. And I guess they was holding it tight to the vest, right? But when I knew that Raekwon was going to put out his solo album, Only Built for Cuban Links, and when I finally heard it, I didn't expect anything less. And I think that I was even more like, I was bugging off of the songs that he was coming up with. I was like, yo, that Only Built for Cuban Links, it made me want to go back to the drawing board because the album was just super dope.
I think the Infamous came out, Infamous came out in April because it just celebrated its 25th anniversary. Right. Only Built for Cuban Links came out, if I recall, later on that summer.
Right.
So do you feel like if the release dates had been flipped, do you think listening to Only Built first would have sent you back to maybe tweak some stuff on your own album if you had the chance?
I believe it would have, you know, but I think the A&Rs, Matty C and Scott Free would have stopped me. You know, Prodigy and them would have stopped me. Because to be honest, I could work on an album forever. You literally have to peel me away from production because I'll work on it forever.
Bringing this back to Raekwon specifically, what do you think made him distinctive as an MC? Like, what was he doing stylistically that made it unique to him and to himself?
Raekwon?
Yeah.
I think that he was just lyrically legible. Like, you could understand every word that he said. Sometimes, when rappers rap, you know, you'd be like, what was that word he said? With Raekwon, you understand every word he says, so it's easy to relate to. But all I need is my house, my gat, my act. Bank account fat is going down like that. Important with French, but let me speak Italian. Black stallions wowing on Shaolin. That means the Allen is statin. And niggas carry gats in. Man, police of Manhattan. Now, yo, what up? Only Built for Cuban Links when Raekwon dropped it. It couldn't have came at a more perfect time.
Say more, though. Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, you had Biggie, he dropped his joint. You know, Nas, everybody dropped their joint.
Right.
Mobb Deep. You know, I'm only naming East Coast. I don't mean to leave anybody else out. But
for sure.
Everybody was dropping dope albums that year in that time period, for that 2 year span, right? All these dope albums coming. And then here comes Only Built for Cuban Links with the icing on the cake. And he did it well. It's like the album, you could play it from front to back. I just played it the other day and it don't get old.
Right.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you think this is the best of the Wu-Tang solo albums?
You know what? I would say this. That was an incredible album, man. You know, I can't say that it was the best of the solo albums because each one individually, when they all did their solos, was dope. For their own project. But I think Only Built really, it stopped time when it came out. It just stopped time and everything stopped, and it was that. It turned into the Purple Tape.
Yeah. Yo, bust the war, son, beat the arson. Many brothers I be sparking and busting mad light inside the dark. Call me Dose Snatcher, just a brother for the rapture. I hang glide, holding on strong, hard to capture. Extravagant, RZA bake the track and it's militant. Then I react like a convict and start killing shit. It's manifested, the gods work like a... Havoc, what to you is the fire track off of this LP? Like, even now, 25 years later, you listen to it. What's the song off here that just jumps up and smacks you in the face?
Ice Cream. Your whole shell, baby's wicked like Nimrod. Caught me like a freshwater straw, or may I not be God? Attitude is very rude, boo. Crabby like seafood. It turns me on like Vine, see it all rude. They call me Starkey Love One. Check the strategy by any means. Shirley Temple Cross was done by Billie Jean's. Black Mrs. I get the chills every time I hear that song. Like, straight up. All jokes aside. So when I hear that song, it puts me in a time. It puts me... It's like I feel like I'm there. Like, I remember when that song was popping. I had the Camry with the broken windows, and I was just like listening to that. Oh, man. Damn. It gives me the chills.
What is it about that song in particular?
I mean, number one, first of all, the video was crazy, right?
Yes, it was.
The video make you like the song even better, you know what I mean? Because yep. they was Wu-Tanged out, you know what I mean?
They were.
And they had all the hood chicks, like, you know what I mean, on some ice cream thing. And
they did.
The song was, and then Capadonna comes in there. Killing it.
Bitches paranoia for this thing. Who want the most of me? Only a heart doesn't want to be calling me cousin. Thirsty for my catalog, baby. Shopping's free of loving. Call me if you want to get dug like the pockets. I just am like a giant, break wounds out of the socket.
And then you got Method Man. He's just bodying the hook.
Yeah. Watch these rat niggas get all up in your guts. Prince Vanilla Butter Pecan Chocolate Deluxe. Even Caramel Sundaes is getting touched. Scooped in my ice cream truck.
Oh my god. And yo, there's mad songs on that album that I could have easily just went to.
Right.
But it's Ice Cream Give Me the Chills.
Right.
Because it had a video to it. So I'm like, yo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And the loop was ill. I mean, that loop that RZA hooked up was.
Yeah.
Smoking.
Yeah.
Summertime, fine jury dripping. Seen you on pickings with a bunch of chickens. How you clicking? I kept shooting strong notes as we got close.
Morgan, how about you? What are your fire tracks off this LP?
It's hard to pick one.
Yeah.
I love Ice Cream, but if there's one that gives me stank face where I just am like, I can't move on, is Incarcerated Scarfaces.
Oh,
yes.
That's a knocker.
For real, it's just slang rap democracy. Here's the policy, slide off the ring, plus the wallabies. Check the status, soon to see me at Caesar's Palace eating salads. Be beating Mike, Senegis to Dallas. I move rhymes like retail, make sure shit sell. From where we at, to my man sell. From
staircase. Can I change my answer?
Yo.
Incarcerated Scarfaces was dope.
Yo.
Oh my god.
Yo.
I told you, this album made me want to go back to the drawing board. I'm telling you. It was crazy. And I say that truthfully. Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, that one is the one. And I think also too, and it doesn't get talked about as much, but I really like Verbal Intercourse. Well,
funny style, niggas rolling a pal. Rooster heads profile on a bus to Rikers out. Holding weed inside they pussy with their minds on the pretty things in life. Props is a true thug's wife. It's like a cycle. Niggas come home, some of go in, do a bullet, come back.
When that Verbal Intercourse dropped, it was like a gift from the gods. It's like, wait a minute, like that beat, you never even heard a beat like that before.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was just, it was almost like it wasn't fair. That's how good these songs was.
We like to ask about favorite moments on the album. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to circle back to something I was saying earlier, which is about the beginning of Knuckleheads.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I've listened to this album more times than I can remember over the last quarter century. And it doesn't matter how many times I hear it. I never quite predict when the drums and the piano come in because RZA didn't put it onto a standard kind of 4-4 track. It just, they drop in where they drop in. And so to this day, where that the beat really begins is it still catches me off balance. And I just love the fact that he already from the beginning of this album, I feel unsettled. I don't know what's coming. And Knuckleheads personifies that on a sonic level.
Lay on the crime scene, sipping fine wines, full of nines on UFOs, taking they fly close, they eyes closed. We getting loot, no doubt, check the word of mouth.
Morgan, how about you? What are your favorite moments off this album?
I gotta say a standout moment for me, besides Striving for Perfection, which I already mentioned because I love that opener. But for me, it's the beginning of Rainy Days.
Of how to conquer these rainy days.
You sang beautifully just now.
I sang for him, and he isn't here.
Down, man. What's up, lad?
Niggas just fucking robbed my gate, man.
Word?
I'm fucking, yo, I'm gonna murder somebody. Man.
He's changing.
And I just love that it's like a whole movie in one disparate parts put together, and then it just starts. And that to me is probably my favorite moment on the album.
Havoc, how about you? Do you have a favorite moment off this LP?
Oh man, the whole album is a moment to me. You know what I mean? The whole album. But the you know, just to highlight something off the album that people probably really don't talk about too much, but they probably do. Biters.
You know what I'm saying? For real, because I'm approaching niggas, man. For real, man. I don't want nobody sound like me, man. For real, son. You know, bad enough, nigga. I don't want nobody sound like nobody from my clan, man. Keep it real. Get your own shit, man, and be original.
That's all, man.
You're going to come out your own way. Whatever how you're going to take it, man. Fuck it.
Ghostface lingo is just so crazy in there. He's like, yeah, you know, you say your little word, and then here they come with the word, taking your word.
Like being original.
You know what I'm saying? I could listen to it all day. Like, you know, they slang, they accent is just everything, man.
It's funny because I think that song, that interlude, and the aforementioned Prodigy's infamous prelude are two of my favorite skits from that entire era, partly because you just assume that they're basically subtweeting people, and in your mind you're just trying to figure out who are they talking about.
Right.
And with Sharkbiters, I didn't realize at the time they were talking about Biggie. And of course, in hindsight, now it makes total sense in terms of the cover of Ready to Die and comparing it to the cover of Illmatic. But I didn't realize until years later that there was even beef between those two camps, or at least just these accusations flying back and forth. And I guess I just love the ways in which you have a little bit of inside baseball happening within this album. And Havoc, to your point, if you knew, you knew. And if you didn't know, it still sounds good because you just like hearing people talking shit. And that's exactly what that skit was.
Exactly.
These niggas is biting off your album cover and shit. Yeah. Boom, bad enough they biting lines like niggas killed me when they came with some knot. Niggas bit off a nine shit. You know what I'm saying? Well, niggas caught his little album cover. Boom, then I did a nine shit that shit. Yeah. I'm like, damn, what the fuck, man? It's like
Havoc, let me ask this with Sharkbiters. Did you know what they were talking about? I got to assume you did, but more to the point, what was your reaction when you heard them basically calling out Biggie indirectly?
Now, I would have loved to say, yes, I knew who they were talking about at first, but I definitely didn't know who they were talking about. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I consider myself to be on the inside, right?
Yeah.
But when I finally found out, I was surprised, but then I wasn't surprised. You know what I mean? Because I thought there was a lot of camaraderie there between Big, the Wu, and Nas and everybody. But then when I found out what it was over and what it represented, I said, okay, yeah, it makes sense. But I don't think it ever, you know, went off of the tape, right? You know what I mean? It wasn't you know what I mean? It was just people expressing themselves. Right. But, yeah, but when I finally found out, I was like, oh shit. Wow.
They kept it hip hop, as they say.
Right. You
know? For sure.
Is there a sleeper jam off this album for you, Havoc? Something that maybe when you first listened, it wasn't the thing that was hitting for you, but as time has gone by, it's the song that you've come back to and rediscovered in a way.
Let me see. I will have to say Spot Rushes. That's one of those hidden gems on the album.
Like anchors on ships flooded with all diamond chips, back pockets, two clips, four fifths with rubber grips laying. Two bottles of brass I was slaying, meditating. Red dot be waiting for my payment. Heard the key in the lock, cock the Glock, turn the lights out, dip behind the couch, key on Gag's mouth, infrared at his head when he enters.
Havoc, if you had to describe Only Built for Cuban Links in three words, what three words would you choose?
That's my shit.
Yes.
Fake niggas who try to flex hard came and went. They couldn't match up with the fly nigga with his back against the wall. Heads clocked once I came in the door. I played the speaker, sipping a Kahlua. Saw this bad bitch with a switch.
And that'll do it for our special episode on all of the Wu-Tang albums we've discussed on the show so far. Like we mentioned earlier, if you liked these clips, please take a listen to the full episodes.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.